Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us today from IBM is Kevin Green. Dave, along with being the Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DoD, you recently became the Director of DoD's Business Transformation Agency. First, would you tell us about BTA and your role leading it, and more importantly, what functions are being transferred to other agencies, and how are you identifying the functions that are either going to other agencies or being altogether eliminated?
Yes, I apparently had too much time on my hands, so I got, as they say, additional duties as assigned. As I mentioned earlier, the Secretary of Defense is extremely committed to reducing overhead costs and driving money out of the sort of support side of the business so that it can go into the primary mission of the department. And so a number of efficiency initiatives have been announced by him beginning in August and continuing more recently. And one of those was the decision to disestablish the Business Transformation Agency, a great organization that had done a lot of great work and continues to do a lot of great work, but one that was created before there was an Office of the Deputy Chief Management Officer. And so the Secretary has made a decision to disestablish it. David Fisher, who had been the first and only director of the Business Transformation Agency, has found another job. And so we thought, since the Business Transformation Agency works for us, it would be the right thing to do to have me look after the graceful shutdown of the organization as opposed to forcing that job upon somebody else. So I have two basic goals. The one is that there's a whole lot of really important work that the organization has been doing that must continue on. And then, of course, the second and equally important goal is that we take care of all the people. So the way the process will work between now and June 30th, which is when we're supposed to be done with the disestablishment, is that basically the work moves to two places. The systems side of the Business Transformation Agency. The Business Transformation Agency was the program management organization for a number of the big DoD business systems, defense travel system, standard procurement system, wide area workflow. There's a whole list of programs. The Defense Agency Initiative, which is one of the more successful ERPs in the department. So the system side of the business is going to go to the Defense Logistics Agency. DLA, large defense agency already, does a lot of program management for a lot of big systems already, particularly in the logistics space. So we think that they're well equipped to take over the management of the big systems. So some of the people and all of the business systems will go to DLA. And then the other half of the Business Transformation Agency's job is the sort of work that's the sort of DCMO portfolio. So the business enterprise architecture, these end-to-end process improvements, the enterprise integration and alignment work, the how do you use ERPs to the maximum extent possible, how do you look at your verticals and your horizontals, the strategic management planning, the performance management. So that portfolio will come to us. So some work will come to us, some work will come to DLA, and then there will be efficiencies along the way. We'll be able to have reduced staffing in overhead functions as we do these migrations. And again, between now and June 30th, we'll be spending every day trying to help make sure that everybody either has a job in a gaining organization or somewhere else.
During FY11, the department's seeking to reduce its IT infrastructure costs. Would you elaborate on the department's strategy in this area? How does rationalizing infrastructure and employing server virtualization factor into this strategy? And what are the potential benefits of going in this direction?
Yeah, I think that there are probably two really big initiatives this year that are going to significantly change the way the department does business, and you'll want to keep an eye on both of them. The first one we already covered, which is the IT acquisition reform work, and the second one is this. So again, as part of the efficiency work of the department for the secretary, we're working on an IT consolidation roadmap. How could you improve effectiveness while reducing costs and sort of optimize on that nested set on how do you get the information to the right person at the right time? How do you raise the bar in security? And how do you improve the sort of cost picture by getting rid of a world that's highly localized and duplicated over and over and over again? And you touch on the point. So there's a whole series of things. It starts with this idea about everyone doesn't need their own data center. Right, and we all suffer from personal control problems in the Department of Defense. Perhaps you guys do in your organizations too, but you know, I would refer to them lovingly as server huggers. You know, I want to own my own server because I feel a lot better, and I know it's mine, and it's here in my building, and the future isn't like that. And so, you know, as we move away from that, clearly tools like virtualization allow us to move to common data centers. They're staged in the right place. Caching of information and stuff allows you to not have everything everywhere. And so data center consolidation is a part of the strategy. We have historically have security architectures that are local. around individual bases and camps, posts, and stations. So we end up being little virtual networks from one base to another. So we could raise the security architecture to do a better job protecting all of us and not letting it be an impediment to information sharing between bases. There is a lot of work that can be done about moving to the cloud. I need people to be able to get on anywhere and find the information that they need. So the information can't just be localized. We've made a lot of progress over the years with software licensing in our Department of Defense Enterprise Software Initiative, but there are still more opportunities to consolidate enterprise licensing, leverage our buying power. Likewise, we want to look at hardware, commodity buying, and how we can leverage our buying power there. Thinking even pushing farther from the work we've already done about reciprocity for security certification and accreditation, all the things that you could do to make us be more of a defense enterprise and make information flow more readily while also doing a better job of security. And while that sounds like a lot of things to do at once, I actually think it's completely possible. And it will be more about getting people to change their worldview to accept the fact that you could be part of a big team.
Reflecting on your tenure as Deputy CIO at the Department of Defense, what are the key lessons learned that can assist you and translate into your new role as Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer?
Yeah, the world changed. And, you know, one of the reasons why you're an expert where you are is because you've learned how the system works as it is. And, I mean, of course, you're a leader wherever you are because you also had great skills and abilities and all that kind of stuff. But there is a certain thing about, you know, we learn how the system works and we learn how the processes work. And then, you know, the cheese gets moved and we suddenly are faced with a new world that's different, and it happened. And so people have to sort of accept that and face that change rather than being reluctant to embrace it. So if you can ride the waves of change, you can make huge improvements, right? Because it's hard. If you imagine a bell curve of an organization, there's very few people that live out there at the, you know, I am just so eager to change, right? And the majority of the world is sort of more change neutral or even change averse. Sometimes it helps, though, if you can resonate with them. If you look over the history of technology, right? I mean, the advent of personal computers, right? The emergence of the World Wide Web, the proliferation of droids and iPhones and iPads and things like that are all examples about how, you know, people want some of that. And so if you can weave the change around helping people to get something that they want, then they can maybe become a little bit more willing participants of change. We already talked about the idea that it's all cross-boundary and that there's this huge need for speed. You cannot be content with the time it takes to get any of this work done. You have to move with more speed and agility. And again, there's this whole cultural change thing, that there are perturbations that go through any kind of change management initiative. And yet, whenever you tell somebody, I'm going to do something new, they expect it to be better. I mean, why would you be doing the new thing unless it's better? And I don't care how good you are. There is some time period where performance is, you know, impeded while the change and the perturbations of change take place until you get to the new place. And we really do a lousy job of helping work people through that. That, right? And so, you know, all the sort of stuff in the John Cotter book from years ago about leading change, right? About, you know, once you've created a sense of urgency, you better do things like celebrating your success, being very visible about the progress that you're making so you can help people work through that cultural change that has to happen.
You know, Dave, picking up on the idea of cross-boundary and sharing of information, what are you doing to break down information stovepipes across the military? And how has net centricity changed over time? And what does it mean today as opposed to what it meant maybe a decade ago?
Yeah, it's a crucial issue. And it's one that every leader, I don't care if you have information in your job title or not, every leader has to be focused on this issue. And I hate to say, but it always starts with data. I've been saying for years that data is sexy, and for some reason, people don't seem to get too excited about it. But I was vindicated this year because I think it was last March, there was an Economist magazine supplement on data, and it said that the sexy job of the year was in 2010 was data scientist. So I don't know, perhaps economists set a low bar on what's sexy, but but we'll work with them on that, right? And so it really is this future about if you could decouple data from the applications and systems, you have this ability to do things with a speed never before dreamed possible. If you look at just the way the world works, right? I mean, if data is available to be consumed, I can mash it up over whatever kind of picture I want, Google Earth, or pick whatever you want, and I can get capabilities to people in hours and days, not weeks or months. If you don't take advantage of this Web 2.0 world, if you don't take advantage of social media and social networks, you are completely missing the point. If you think Second Life is about playing a game, let's say, right, then you're just missing the point because people are using Second Life to do online university teaching and business meetings and things like that. If you think Facebook is about catching up with an old college chum, you're missing the point. And you need look no farther than Haiti to see how these social networking tools were used to save people's lives. It is not just about maintaining quality of life, although that would be enough of a reason for an organization like the Department of Defense to use these kinds of tools. But in your partnership with non-government organizations and people that aren't part of your internal network, these kinds of tools are absolutely crucial to getting the work done. And frankly, if you want to be an employer of choice to the net generation, the millennials that are coming into our workforce now, you better provide that kind of an environment, that takes advantage of service-oriented approaches and Web 2.0 and the cloud and social networking, or you're not going to give them an environment that's going to unleash the creativity and the fire and inspiration they have. The good news is they want careers of service. So they should, you know, we should be a good target for them to come work for us and make a difference. But they're not like my parents' generation where they spend 40 years working for the company and get the gold watch. They want to be a place where they get a chance to lead and they get a chance to make a difference. If you don't think differently about how you're going to take care of them, care, nurture, mentor them, and you don't give them these kinds of tools to be able to do work at work the way they do their home lives, they won't stay with you.
This is a nice segue into the fact that most achievements in government are not solo acts, and government work is accomplished by teams of employees. I want to get a sense on your approach to empowering your employees. How do you lead change and enable your staff and organization to accept the inevitability of change?
Yeah, you are so right. And, you know, sometimes I foot stomp on the same thing over and over again. But, you know, it really is all about the power of team. As leaders, we have to embrace continuous learning. I mean, you need a team that's prepared to face this future. And the pace of change and the way the world is changing is really rapid. And if you're not demanding a sort of continuous learning environment in your organization where people are getting exposed to these new ideas and new approaches, then you will fall forever behind. If you think about it, if you give people the right tools and the right skills, then, you know, you can unleash their creativity and send them off to do great things and have their back. And you don't have to micromanage and meddle in the day-to-day affairs because you've set them up for success. Having said that, though, you have an obligation to your employees about covenant relationships. You know, you all have an organizational goal. You're all working for the company, for the agency, and you got to make that agency goal happen. You also got to make sure you're taking care of each other. So what are you doing to help give them the tools that they need and have their back as they go through it? There's a fascinating dilemma that, you know, that sort of harkens back to the Innovator's Dilemma book, right? That the new ideas often require you to sort of step out of the fabric of the organization in order to gain what I would call escape velocity. So, you know, so we try to take advantage of pilots and experiments and things that don't seem to threaten the status quo. So if you can step outside of the sort of norm of the organization, you sometimes get a chance to get liftoff where you might not have otherwise. But at the same time, you have to think about how it will fold back. Because if it doesn't fold back into the organization, it won't outlast the leader who gave it the escape momentum. So escape velocity, but then a returning to the fabric of the organization. And as we mentioned before, you know, creating and maintaining high trust relationships so that you don't lose the time because people don't trust the outcome that you're proposing and they're able to see what's going on. And again, it all starts with you.
And I like to keep it on the employer. And in particular, I'd like to talk a little bit about HR management across DOD and go to the HR management that encompasses all activities supporting DOD personnel and family members throughout their career and beyond, really. What are some of the key initiatives being pursued in this area?
There's a lot of things that are going on. One of them I sort of touched on already, this idea about the net generation. My old team, the DOD CIO team, was a champion on behalf of the federal government for writing a net generation workforce guide, which you can find on the Federal CIO Council website if you want to go take a look at it. I think it's recommended reading whether you're a federal manager or a private sector manager, you know, because it does a great job of sort of identifying the workforce problem that we face as people retire, and then how this net generation, which is the next boom, much bigger population than the Generation X between the baby boomers and the millennials, you know, what are their sort of values and norms, or what are they looking for? And as I mentioned, and, you know, they have a desire for public service, but they also have expectations that we need to be able to meet if we're going to be an employer of choice. And so the report does a good job of sort of helping you understand what they're looking for and how you could, you know, meet those needs and make sure that you are an employer of choice. Similarly, it takes far too long to bring people on board. So one of the big issues that the DCMO team is working on is this idea about streamlining the hiring process. And progress is being made. Another one is the idea about security clearances. We have a security clearance process for people that was developed decades ago. And it's like the age-old story about, you know, we continue to do things a certain way long after there's any relevancy to the way it was done. And so what might have made sense back in the days of J. Edgar Hoover, which is when some of these rules actually were created, right, isn't necessarily as germane in a world of Web 2.0, right? And so if you think about it, you know, how much time do you spend checking up on neighbors for security clearances versus how much time do you spend checking credit reports and things like that, and what value do you get out of it, and what can you do to speed up the process, reduce the number of steps, and get people on board and cleared quicker. And great progress has been made. There are very significant and dramatic reductions in the last year alone of the number of days, you know, from months to days to do some of these steps. And it's our hope that, you know, this has been a high-risk issue for us with GAO. And normally in the Department of Defense, we only ever get more high-risk areas, but we're actually thinking that we've made enough progress that when GAO announces their new high-risk list very soon with the rollout of the budget, that this may come off, that we've made that much progress in reforming security clearances. And that's been a job that Beth McGrath has done personally, and it's another example of you can't do it alone. So it's been a partnership between the intelligence community and the Department of Defense and OPM to help figure out how you could drive the process to be more effective, more streamlined.
What does the future hold for management at the U.S. Department of Defense? We will ask Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.